Hello, everybody. My name is Linda Mtenjane. I am a clinical psychologist and co-founder of The Space Between Us. Welcome to Conversations with The Space Between Us. So today we're talking about autism. And I think it's important to just pause and understand what it is we're talking about. Often when people think autism, you know, what kind of comes to your mind is Rain Man for those of us who are a little bit older, maybe The Good Doctor for people who are a little bit younger. But actually, what it is it's simply a brain difference that has some challenges, but also has very special talents. As psychologists, we think about autism as a spectrum that has a collection of differences in it. So on the one hand, you actually have people who never are able to speak, who need 24/7 care. And on the other hand, you have people who are highly intelligent, but who have some perhaps challenges socially, with some sort of repetitive motion, and sometimes with some sensory sensitivity. So it's really, I want you to think about autism in a spectrum. It is a spectrum, it is a syndrome. There are a variety of elements that go into calling someone autistic. I'm not alone today. I'm joined by Ayanda, a single mom, who has the most inspiring story. She has raised a boy, a young boy who's now 20 years old, who is autistic. So from him not speaking, no words, to him matriculating and now going into his first year of university. Welcome, Ayanda.
Thank you, Linda. Lovely to be here. Thanks.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit around, tell us about Lunwabo, your son.
I have an amazing two boys, but I think today's topic talks about my firstborn, who, as you rightfully said, turns 20 in about a week's time. What an intelligent young man. He's responsible. He matriculated last year with a bachelor's pass. Is currently at Varsity College doing his first year in computer science and mobile app technology. Yeah, he's the man of my house. As you've rightfully said, I am a single mom to two boys, and he really is my right hand man. You know, he has a driver's license. He picks his brother up from school. I can go on and on about my Lunwabo, but
That sounds amazing. That sounds amazing because, from what I understand, he's a gentleman as well. And if we all didn't know, what else would you want to tell us about Lunwabo?
Well, the one thing that people don't know when they first meet him is that he actually is living with autism. Was diagnosed when he was about 3 years old, and now he's 20.
So that's really interesting, because being diagnosed that young is not usual, especially in the Black community. How did you get it to get him diagnosed at such a young age?
I picked it up, I'd say, from when he was about 2 years old, where he started going to creche, and he just had social skills at creche that were not the same as what the other kids were. Like, he was hitting kids in school, and at the first creche, they expelled him. And I had to find another creche for him. And that one also expelled him. And then I knew that I had a problem.
Sure. And then what did you do?
I then consulted, there's a psychologist friend of mine that I did consult, and she made referrals. And eventually I was referred to a very good child psychiatrist, Dr. or Professor Lorna Jacklin, who conclusively diagnosed autism and made a couple of recommendations, one of which being the school that Lonwabo goes to, because at that point he was nonverbal at all. And when he did speak, all he did was repeat exactly what you were saying. So I think they call it echolalia in psychologist terms. So I would ask him, how was school today? And he would repeat, how was school today? So he wasn't processing. So the journey began then. And at that point, I myself did not even know what autism was. You spoke of Rain Man. I spoke to a friend of mine and I said to her, Dr. Jacqueline has actually said that Lonwabo is autistic. And she was like, what? Autism? And I didn't know why she's making such a big deal about it, because I didn't know what it was. Until I watched the movie Rain Man and I started reading about this disorder, and wow, I've learned so much about autism in the last 20 years.
Yeah, no, I can very well imagine, because you're really one of the few women I know who not only made sure that the diagnosis was quite early on, but actually then went on to do something about it. So, I mean, one of the elements that is always striking with autistic, with some autistic children, is when they develop speech. So how old was Lonwabo when he spoke for the first time?
He was 6 and a half when he started speaking, to a point where I could tell that he understands what he's saying. So from about 3-4 years old, he was just repeating words. And at some point was speaking gibberish, to a point where I just wanted him to speak and also understand. So, and I remember saying to my family, you know, even if he speaks Chinese, can he just speak? You know, so, and that's the reason why we started speaking English at school, so that at home, sorry, so that we can be consistent with what was being spoken at school, and so as to not confuse him. And he's always spoken English all his life. So I can say, to answer your question, 6 and a half.
So that is definitely one of the key elements in terms of the clusters of issues that we see with autism. And what I find quite interesting, Ayanda, is that inability to understand social cues, respond with verbal language, also then surely has an impact on how you build relationships with other people. So what were his friendships like at a young age? And what are they like now at 20?
Okay, yeah. I'll talk about, he actually had no friends. I mean, autistic kids are generally loners anyway. So, but his social skills were so bad that he was the child that nobody wanted to around them. And I know even within my own circle of friends, it was quite difficult to actually bring Lonwabo to my social circles, because my friends feared for their kids, you know, because he really used to hit other kids and just be inappropriate. I'll tell you about one incident where a friend of mine brought her kids to my house, and the kids were all around the same age as Lonwabo, and I had to take them all to a kiddies party. And they were all having fun at the party. I think they were jumping on jumping castles. And next thing, all the kids just ran to me with this child that had been hit at the top of his forehead with a stone by Lonwabo and was bleeding. And I literally got this child in. And remember, this is a child that was actually in my care. And I phoned the mother and I said, let's meet at Olivedale Clinic, you know, and I just, the party had to stop. But fortunately, that parent understood what, you know, the challenges that Lunabo had, and the damage wasn't so bad on that child, but he actually was bleeding. He had to get stitches on his head. But not all parents are that understanding.
Absolutely. But that must have broken your heart, being in that scenario.
It did. Yeah. I just, all I did was praying. I've never driven so fast, broken so many rules on the road, just to get this child, this bleeding child that was in my car, to hospital. But it turned out fine, like it always does.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I wonder if you could share with us, Ayanda, that sounds like a tough example, but being a boy child, relationships at a young age were difficult, as you're saying. What about now, in his teens? What is he like relationship-wise? Just having the social relationships, being able to see cues, being able to have a reciprocal conversation. What's that like?
You know, Linda, I think dealing with autistic kids, what you put in is what you get out. So over the years, we've put in so much into Lunabo, where he's actually learned the tools of dealing with his own condition. So now at 20, he has his own circle of friends, and I think they have each other's back. They understand each other, and they met in a high school which was a remedial school. So they all understand that they have their own challenges. But I want to reiterate that he didn't just turn out to be the Lunabo that we see now. A lot was put into getting him to this point where he can see social cues, speak to himself when he's becoming aggressive, and know what to do.
Yeah. So give me an example for our listeners. Could you help us? What are some of these tools that you keep talking about that you put into this 20-year-old who, yes, is autistic, but is living a normal life? What were some of the tools?
The first thing I did was, as I said, Professor Jacqueline referred me to a school that deals specifically with children with speech disabilities. So the main focus there, and in that school is called the Talk Shop. It's in Bryanston. They had all the multidisciplinary psychologists that were there. So they had speech therapists, they had occupational therapists, they had play therapists, they had it all there.
Yeah.
So, and Lunabo has done therapy practically all his life. And some of the therapies were weaned off as he was getting older.
Okay.
But he actually still even is going to psychotherapy when he needs. And now we're at a point, because he's much older, he tells me when he feels overwhelmed and feels that he needs therapy.
Okay. So certainly, what I'm hearing you say is the ability to find the right environment, the right school. First of all, make sure that there's a diagnosis that makes sense, the right school that can nurture this kind of child becomes a very important thing to do. What did you do at home? What were some of the practices that you used at home?
When he gets over, what I learned also dealing with Lunabo is that when he's aggressive, you mustn't be aggressive back, because you're then teaching him that behavior. So very early on in the journey with Lunabo's autism, I learned that if he hits me, I mustn't hit him back. And which was quite difficult because, you know, you're almost like allowing a child to hit you. But, you're reinforcing good behavior by not repeating what he's doing. So that's one of the things that I can see the results of over the years. And he knows he mustn't hit, no matter how angry he is. So what he does is, if there's a squabble either with his brother or myself or whoever, he walks away. He goes to his room, he closes the door, he calms down. Then he'll come out and he'll say, okay, Mom, I'm calm, can we talk? Which is not the Ronaldo that was there 10 years ago. He was, you know, he couldn't manage his condition.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in fact, as you're talking about all the fighting as a little boy, I can just imagine that level of frustration and anger that he didn't know what to do with. Mm. And I'm just sitting here thinking, as a black woman with this child, ongakuzeki, there must have been, certainly in the family, parts of the family that had different explanations. Did you ever do anything but therapy? Did you try other things?
Yeah. My in-laws were saying that, first of all, they would say, oh, so-and-so in the family also spoke late, so don't worry about it. And in my mind, I was like, this child is four and a half, five, so I need to do something about it. And then they said, oh, we need to do this ritual in Belebo for him. Where they slaughter a goat and speak to the ancestors and actually tell the ancestors that we've got this child or whatever. And I did all of that. I did everything that I was told to do, which is probably, you know, what has worked. Because had I not done what I was told to do, I'd probably say, well, maybe things could have been better or different. I did it all. But he still had the challenges that he had with me having done that.
So, Ayanda, you mentioned two very important skills that you taught this young man, or at least school taught and you reinforced. One of them is the ability to have the ability to talk to yourself. And of course, I come from a community where self-talk, again, you're like, you're not well, you're speaking to yourself. But I think the appreciation that self-talk and the ability to regulate yourself and talk yourself down is important. And I want to just go through some of the skills that you think are going to stand him in good stead as he goes into an unprotected environment. So self-talk definitely is one of them. Can you think about any other?
That works for him. But also when he feels, you know what, I'm not behaving like her. I'm not being appropriate, or I'm joking too much, because he really misses those social cues. And it's fine when it's the softer side of things, but when he's becoming aggressive and he realizes this, he's got his psychologist practically on speed dial. And because she's walked the journey so long with him, she doesn't see him often. She doesn't, you know, initially we were doing once every 2 week sessions, then it became once a month. And eventually she said, look, you guys contact me whenever you need to. And I don't contact her. He goes directly himself, which is great.
So, Ayanda, you were saying how this young man who is usually unable to pick up social cues, who can be quite aggressive when he isn't able to do his self-talk, who has picked up all these cool tools, not just from school, but from mum, has his psychologist on speed dial when he needs somebody to talk to. And that's so important, just in terms of, first of all, acknowledging that love on its own in terms of parents and siblings is not enough. You probably need professional assistance when you need it. I guess that's a critical thing. So where I want to go to, Ayanda, is that there are, as I understand autism, three clusters of things that happen. So one is the relationships and the social cues and that social world and the inability to really navigate that properly. And I think we sometimes see it in young professionals as they get into the workplace, and we don't know whether or not they're on the spectrum. But the second one is around sensory sensitivity. Did he have anything from a sensory perspective that he was very sensitive to? Was there anything at all? I'm laughing because I'm repeating.
No, actually, funny, from all the reading that I've done on autism, he didn't, except for noise. And even okay. to this day, Lunabu does not like loud noises. And I'm such a loud person, especially when I have my friends over and whatever. And he just can't handle that.
So what does he do when he can't handle? What happens when he hears loud noise? So probably his sensitivity is to sound, because it is light, it's sound, it's all the five senses. So probably his is sound. What does he do?
Yeah, well, you know, we got to meet each other halfway. So I say to him, okay, we'll be a little bit softer. But you also just stay in your room away from the noise. So we kind of like meet each other there, you know.
That sounds very much like a black mother. but also I think just the ability to also normalize what is happening with him by coming up with strategies like let's meet each other halfway. Mm. I do want to ask you about the last cluster, which is really just around what we often find with autistic young people is that they tend to focus on a topic and then they know everything about that topic, or they are highly gifted in one area. What was it like for Lunwabo with that?
Lunwabo, as a young child, I think he was about 3, 4, 5 years old at the time, was very obsessed with aeroplanes. And he could draw that SAA aeroplane and like a replica of it with the wow. flag on the tail. And even when I would fly with him, all he would say, if I'm flying another airline, he would point at SAA. And, you know, if I've booked another airline, he would know he's not going Kululu or anything. He's going SAA. But that obsession, you know, fell off as he grew older. And he was then fixated on Formula One. I think since he started watching Formula One and which I would say is about 3, he has not missed a single race of Formula One. It doesn't matter. Wow. You know, when he was in his matric year, I actually thought, no, this guy's going to focus on matric. No, he made sure that he arranged his studies such that he still has that hour to watch Formula One on a Sunday when it was on. And he's actually taught me Formula One as well, which is awesome, you know. So you know, he's not a child that's all over the show. If he likes something, he sticks to that.
So I'm glad that that's how you view it. So obviously, you know, coming from the clinical perspective, we also know that is definitely one of the indicators. And I'm sitting here thinking about the couples that I work with and people's obsession with certain things, certain strictness, whether it's we must eat at 7 every day, or, you know, and I'm just wondering, when you think about Lunwabo, in a young Lunwabo in a relationship in a less protected environment, what would be one or two of the things that you would say to a person that he will be falling in love with in the next 5 years?
I think, Linda, it's important for me to sit that person down and actually be honest with that person about Lunwabo's challenges. Because in as much as he's doing great, you know, he's literally done a 360 from when he was 5 years old, the condition never goes away. So it's important that even as he goes, he grows up and goes into the workplace and or starts dating or gets married or whatever, the people that he associates with or deals with or his stakeholders know exactly what they're dealing with. In as much as even when he was growing up, I had to tell the people around me so that when they see a certain behavior, they're not alarmed or think he's not normal or whatever the case is. So it's very important for me to continue walking the journey with him and tell the people around him that, you know, this is the situation, but it is being managed and he's able to manage it himself, you know.
It's a little bit scary to hear you say that about him as he becomes a young adult, because, you know, it sounds like a rather intrusive mother-in-law, but I think we're going to put that one aside. And just talk about outside of home, how does he handle noise, and what would an HR manager or his line manager have to know to make sure that they don't set that off? What would they have to know, for example?
They would have to know that he's living with autism, and know a little bit more about the disability, if I can call it that, because it does fall under the disability, because it's a neurodevelopmental issue. And
absolutely, it's a brain being wired differently.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, it's a brain wired differently. So any company that's employing him needs to like they do with people who are physically disabled, they have ramps so that they you know, it's easier for them to access the building. In the same way for Lunwabo, in as much as it's not physical, they need to ensure that he's in an environment that accommodates his challenges, and such that if it means he needs to have a closed office and not be able to sit in open plan, that would have to, you know, he would have to get such accommodations from employers, from potential employers.
Yeah. So what we see a lot of, that makes sense, that some of the special accommodation would have to be taken into account. So what we see a lot of, Ayanda, is especially the really brilliant and bright young people that we work with, a lot of what one may call introverts, like a really very shy, quiet, not having real skill to engage. And I've often wondered whether or not some of this could have anything to do with being on a spectrum that was never diagnosed. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I see a lot of those people. And in fact, I think I can very quickly diagnose people on the spectrum, even within my own family, but I just can't say it. You know, and
yes.
I think there's, especially amongst us Black people, I think there's definitely still room for us to speak out about this thing. Because I don't think it's ever too late to get a diagnosis and do something about it, and we just don't do enough. And I think even in terms of the government, you know, in terms of the schooling system for people who are not as privileged enough to send their kids to schools that are channeled for autism, the government just really seems to be failing us there. And that's why we have so many people that are adults, and you look at them and you say, but you can't say anything, and you feel that they were never diagnosed, you know.
Yes, no, absolutely. Well, it's quite interesting because we tried to find stats, and it's very hard to find any mental illness or mental health stats, certainly in SA. But what we know from the US stats is that 1 in 36 people is diagnosed with some level of autism, so being on the spectrum. Uh, I want to double click on communication, because I think it is important what you're saying, that so many people who go undiagnosed, if they are talking at a younger age, we often make the assumption that because they look fine, nothing is wrong or is a challenge neurologically. So how did you teach him? How did you teach Lwanabo to communicate better? What did you do?
I taught him to listen. And by me, and how I did that is that I actually listened to him. You know, and
so he taught you to listen as
he actually did, because and in that, you know, and I would say, Lwanabo, I'm going to listen to you. Are you done? All the tools that you probably would know, Linda, as a psychologist, listen, and then almost repeat what the next person has said, so that you show them that you understand what they've said. So from a very early age, because I went to therapy myself, so you know, I was using those tools now on Lwanabo, and also to just be patient. There's no need to hurry with anything, and I think as he's getting older, he's also learning that, you know, rather not say anything if it's going to be inappropriate. You know, so keep yourself in check as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it is the skills that we know, as you rightfully say, but that are not always easy to do. So the ability to just actively listen and mirror before you actually want to come in and be the one who is speaking. How do you see this helping him in the workplace, the ability to have the kind of communication skills that you've given him?
It definitely will help him, Linda, because we know that the workplace can actually be quite ruthless at times. So because he's learned to manage himself and actually talk to himself and keep himself in check, I think he'll actually strive, because he'll be able to walk away from situations that will get him angry or whatever, because that will happen. That's bound to happen.
Yes. You
know? So, I mean, it happens with his cousins. It happens with his friends. So I think the tools that he has, I'm very confident that the day he walks into a job, he'll be able to appropriately use them to his advantage. I don't see him getting into any job and causing the chaos that he caused when he was 5 years old.
Yeah.
You know, because he's now a mature young man.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and we all really should do that, shouldn't we? The ability to know when it's time to walk away. Mm. It does sound like you've put in a lot of work. I think what I'd like you to perhaps just think about for us, because, you know, our primary target for this podcast is young professionals. Mm. Your diagnosis with your son, you were what, early 30s?
Early 30s.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty much the kind of people that we talk to. So you're in your early 30s, you have this young boy, you have these challenges, and you really only start having some level of solution kind of six, seven years into having him. And I just want you to perhaps think about what you would say to the young professionals we talk to, who some are married, some are not, who find themselves having a child who is on the spectrum. What would you say to them?
The first thing I would say is just accept it. If this is what God has given you, and just, you know, deal with it. Acceptance is you're already 80% there. Because I find that with a lot of people, they are in denial, and that denial on the part of the parents actually denies the child eventually.
Oh, no. Sorry, Ayanda, we have to stop. That is beautiful. I'm gonna ask you to say that again, because that is beautiful.
The denial on the part of the parents,
yes,
actually denies the child.
Sure.
In the long term.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I was saying that I find that a lot of the times when parents can see that there's a problem, the schools tell them that there's a problem, but they don't want to accept that because, oh, my child must go to a mainstream school. I'll never have a child in a remedial school, etc., etc. And the person that you are actually killing is that child.
Okay.
In my case, Lunwabu has only been to remedial schools. And I was never in a hurry to get him to mainstream. And look now, he's at varsity college with everybody else. You know, it's varsity is not it's not channeled only for remedial kids. So but I accepted when Lunwabu was 3 years old. And I think that's why we are here.
And that's the main message. So what I've heard you say is,
yes,
let's just start with that acceptance.
Mm.
What I also heard you say is, let's find the right resources. Let's put these children into the right places, because what we get at the end is still a differently wired child, but somebody who can cope a lot better than if we didn't do that when they were young.
Absolutely.
100%. So what would your piece of advice be to him, to Lonwabo, when he starts work? In fact, let's not even go there. He's 20. He's at varsity college. It's no longer protected. It's not a remedial school. What are some of the things that you're saying to him to help him navigate this new world?
Well, I said to him, fortunately, he's not at risk, so he still lives at home with me.
Okay.
So he drives himself to school every morning, to varsity every morning. And I said to him, look, this is now a different ball game. You from an environment where in matric there was, I think, 14 of them in a class.
Yeah.
Now suddenly there's 80 kids in a class. So, you know, and it's still better than having taken him to like a UKZN where there's 400 kids in a class. He was just not going to cope. So we gradually almost weaning him into society and you know, for him to be able to be overwhelmed, to live with so many people around him, because it's always been me and his brother. School was 12 other kids in a class or 13 other kids in a class. Now, and I said to him, you're learning some sort of independence as well, in that if you bunk lectures, the lecturers are not going to phone your mom.
Mm.
You know, they'll just mark you as absent. So he's starting to learn to be more responsible. And he manages his timetables, his tests. I don't know what's going on at varsity, honestly.
Mm.
But I said to him, I've paid the fees and I expect the results. And fortunately, we're dealing with a child here that takes his schoolwork so seriously. I've never had to push him to do homework and, you know, not to play games, etc. He actually takes his schoolwork very seriously and actually gets upset when he hasn't done well for a test.
Mm.
So it's actually very easy to deal with him. But a lot of things he's having to find on his own. Even the other day he learned how to go to the bank on his own.
Mm.
You know, and I was so proud of him.
Mm.
The other day he also went to the police station to get his ID certified.
Mm.
You know, he's now doing things on his own, whereas before I had to always hold his hand, you know.
Mm.
But it is a process.
Mm. So what I really am loving about what we are talking about here is, on the one hand, we're saying it is absolutely important to have these early diagnoses, the early detection. But on the other, what we are hearing from you is that even at a later stage, there are things that can be said, that can be done, that can help people who perhaps weren't as fortunate as Lonabo to actually be diagnosed. So I am saying to managers, HR managers, team leaders, that when we get young people who are on the spectrum, it's more than filling a disability quota. There's certainly support systems that we have to put into place. There's a lot of accountability that comes with taking on that young person. But it sounds as well that there's a lot of joy that could come from it. It's been an absolutely inspiring story to listen to. As we reflect on the young professionals we speak to, I'm hoping that when they hear what you've been able to come through, not just what you've been through, but what you've been able to come through, they feel inspired. I certainly feel inspired sitting here listening to you. Any last word from you before we close?
Thank you. Thanks, Linda. I've actually really enjoyed this chat. I've been wanting to write a book about this, and maybe this is really the push to start pinning down my journey with autism, because as much as it hasn't been an easy one, but it actually has been very rewarding and fulfilling to see this child become this young man, this young responsible man, and for me, the world is his oyster.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. It really is. It really is. Mm. You helped set him up correctly. Thank you for that. And to everyone who's listening, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining me in the conversation. But please do join us on our social platforms and connect with us on thespacebetweenus.africa, where you find lots of tools, lots of articles, and lots about our workshops and our masterclasses, all of them helping young professionals. I look forward to connecting with you again. Till next time, take care and keep it real.